Today's lesson, I wanted to stay in the Sermon on the Mount this morning. So we're going to continue in that lesson that Jesus taught, that sermon that Jesus taught on the Mount. And from it, I want us to take the theme of this lesson is fulfilling all righteousness. I think as we go through there, you'll see why I chose that title. One of the points is we look here at verses 17 through 20. We're going to walk through those four verses. What Jesus is teaching them, and the idea is a spiritual revolution. A negative way of looking at it is a repudiation of the Jews' religion. This whole sermon is a repudiation of the Jews' religion. The scribes and Pharisees, which he actually calls out here specifically, but the entire lesson, the Beatitudes. These people are blessed. The scribes and Pharisees saw them as cursed by God. Jesus says, these are blessed. Great, how great it is for them. Jesus says, how great it is for them. Matter of fact, that's what that slide is. These people are blessed. And the Jews, when I say the Jews, the Jewish elite, they looked down their nose at them. They snubbed their nose at them. They saw them as lesser. They saw them as sinners. They saw them as people who God cursed, but Jesus says they will be blessed. Blessed are them. How great it is for them. And remember, just in the big picture of the book of Matthew, Matthew ends the book flipping the script and saying to the Pharisees and scribes, woe unto you in Matthew 23, or how horrible it's going to be for you. But how blessed it is, how great it is for these. So, as we continue this theme, a spiritual revolution, I've titled it again, that fulfilling all righteousness. So take a note here in verse 17. Let's just walk through these couple of verses because there's some great lessons that I wanted to apply, some really important lessons for us when we get to the end of this. We want to look at the passage first. So as we go through this, and Jesus speaks here, as Matthew records, do not think I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. Jesus' mission was to fulfill the law of prophets. The Jews were going to accuse him. Said, look, the Jewish elite, the scribes and Pharisees, they're going to accuse him breaking the Sabbath law. You heal on the Sabbath, you broke the Sabbath law. You harvested grain on the Sabbath, and you ate it, and you broke the Sabbath law. They were accusing him of abolishing, of destroying, and ignoring the law of Moses. You've sinned, Jesus. You can't be from God. You're a sinner. No, Jesus says, look, I came to fulfill. And it's important to pick the right word here, because he's accused of destroying. And we know in the end, he did set aside the law of Moses because he fulfilled it. He completed it. And then it was set aside. It was not destroyed. And that would be the accusation. He fulfills. Jesus fulfills the law and prophet. He fulfills it. In fact, he is the Messiah, right? Who fulfills the prophecies of the Messiah. He fulfills the prophecy of the kingdom. All these things are fulfilled. And their charge would be he can't be Messiah because he's sinning, he's doing these things wrong. But Jesus says, no, I'm not doing them wrong. I'm doing them right. And I am the fulfillment of the prophecies. He even fulfills the sacrifices and roles. As you look at Jesus and his work, he is our Passover. Every Jew knew what the Passover sacrifice was about. Jesus is the Passover. Jesus is our sin sacrifice. Jesus is our high priest, our go-between, between us and God, is Jesus. And on, we can say all these things. Jesus fulfilled the old law, the old covenant, the prophecies of the old covenant. He fulfilled those things. He'll be accused of breaking them. He'll be accused of destroying them. He's accused of sediments of those things. But he's not. He fulfills them. Then he brings up the idea of timing. Because there is a time element here, lest we forget. There is a time element involved in this. And a time element here, verse 18, for truly I say unto you, until heaven and earth pass away, until there's a great catastrophe, until there's a great change, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass. The King James says jot or tittle. Not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. So he speaks of the timing. Look, there's a time element involved in this. And first of all, I want to bring out the point of the authority of the written word. They were not allowed to change the text. It was inspired by God. It was authorized by God. It was the truth. You can't just go rewrite it. Okay, a jot or tittle will not pass. It's not going away. It's not going to be changed. And you don't have the authority to change it. And so it's steadfast, unmovable, unchangeable, to the nth degree. For a few mathematic folks. Until, there's a but. This is not absolute. Until all is fulfilled. Well, what is all fulfilled? All that was fulfilled about him. Jesus, until Jesus fulfilled the prophecies of the Messiah, which included his death, burial, resurrection, when those things are fulfilled, when the kingdom comes, when the church is established, when all nations come to him, all things are fulfilled. Then the old law has completed its purpose. It's completed. It's fulfilled. It's finished. It's done. It's not broken. It's not destroyed. Remember, we're choosing the correct word here. He'll be accused of breaking the old covenant. He'll be accused of destroying it. No, he fulfilled it. A very important choice of words and to have the correct perspective. Again, the note, the King James used the word jot and tittle. The smallest marks in the Greek and Hebrew languages, the smallest marks can't change. Because it's God's word. And then in the end, if it is fulfilled, it then allows for a change in the covenant. And it did. There was a new covenant to come up. It was the old covenant was set aside. It was less. It was not sufficient. It could not do what the new covenant can do. It could not do what Jesus can do. And so when it was fulfilled, there was a change. And Jesus brought this change. Now this was a hard thing for the Jews. Their family religion said that this is it, and we have to follow it no matter what. And Jesus brought a change. He brought a change. And that was challenging. So he speaks the timing. Some points I draw out, the authority of the written word, right? And so Jesus fulfills that. And then there's this idea of greater and lesser commands. Are there really greater and lesser commands? And what perspective should we have of that? What perspective did they have of that? More importantly, so verse 19 of Matthew 5, whosoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches others the same shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whosoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So are there lesser commands and greater commands? Do I just have to keep the greatest ones? You know, the most important ones. Because there's some that really, really don't matter that much. You know, they're not that important. Is that the right way? Well, the Jews apparently were concerned over the most important commands. Because in the Pharisaical Jew, they wanted to look righteous. So if I can pick out the most important one and do it, then I look righteous. And I might could ignore some of the smaller commands. Those are not quite important. But if I do the important ones, the ones that everybody sees me do, then I'm righteous and I look greater and better. And I can't help but put this in that context. That the Jew looked and said there were important ones and there was ones not so important. Remember in Mark and Matthew, two occasions that Jesus was approached with what is the greatest command? Which one is it? And one of them is very nefarious. They were trying to trick Jesus and trying to get something to make him stumble and say something that they're going to trap him on, right? But regardless, keep the mindset. Which one is the greatest? Why? Because I'm going to do the greatest one. Because I'm going to look righteous and I'm going to look great. And then the other ones, you know, they're not so important, you know. And the reality is that, well, and I got there's a very important lesson I want to draw from this at the end of the sermon. But they were concerned over the most important one. Keep in mind, this is a figure of speech, right? Okay, so don't get stumbled up on this because we ask ourselves, oh, wait a minute. So it says, whoever annuls the least of these commands, whoever does away with the least command and teaches them to do so, will be in the kingdom of heaven, but he'll be less. He'll be lesser. He'll still make it. And that's not right. That's not what Jesus is saying. If you ignore the least command, you're not in heaven. That's a figure of speech. That's hyperbole. That's an exaggeration. We're going to get to verse 20 where it says, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven if you don't exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Again, another figure of speech. The scribes and Pharisees had a level of righteousness, but it wasn't righteousness, right? They are not there. So it's a figure of speech. It's a hyperbole. We can't just ignore the small things and think we're still okay. We can't ignore the steadfast word of God, the mind of God revealed to us. We can't just ignore what he's told us, right? So there's a hyperbole there in this passage and in the next. True greatness are those who do and teach all the commands. Those who do and teach, whoever keeps and teaches them shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. And so true greatness are those who do and teach all the commands of God. They could not overlook a command that God gave them, like caring for the widows in Matthew 15. The Pharisees ignored that command. You know, I'm gonna exempt myself from caring for my parents because I'm gonna dedicate this asset of mine to the temple, but I'm still gonna get benefit off of it. But because I've dedicated the temple, I don't have to care for them, right? So they did away with God's law, right? So true greatness, which the disciples were so concerned with as well, we know that. They were human still. True greatness come to those who do and teach all the commands. And then verse 20, fulfilling righteousness. Fulfilling righteousness. Let's read verse 20 now. For I say unto you that unless your righteousness exceeds or surpasses that of scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. You must do better than the scribes and Pharisees. You must do better. To do their righteousness, to conform to their level of righteousness, their level of righteousness, remember, a hyperbole, that's their righteousness was not true righteousness. It's a figure of speech. But if you're only as good as them, you're not in there. You didn't make it. You're falling short, right? So unless you're righteous, see, the scribes and Pharisees of the Jews were perceived as righteous. The measurements they used, they were healthy, wealthy, they was of status, they've done well in life. Obviously God blessed me, right? But their righteousness, their true righteousness, was their externals. It was just to be seen. It was a ceremony. They would go through the motions, and their heart was never involved. It was a ritual. And there was no attention that they gave to their own heart. Their heart was not in it. They gave, remember, and Jesus is going to address these. Sorry, the rest of the sermon's addressing these things, right? Especially chapter 6 talks about how they gave to the poor, done it publicly. Look what I'm given, right? I'm fasting. Look at me fast. Look how distressed I am. That's how righteous I am, right, in my fast. And so they did things to be seen. It was the externals. It was a ceremony. They went through the motions. Their heart was never engaged in serving God. Their heart was not about serving God. Their heart, in many cases, as we'll see later, is their heart was in making themselves look righteous. Their pride, that they could boast of great things that they thought they could. They are not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. They will not be in the kingdom of heaven. They will not be. And this is a revolution. This was a repudiation right here, smack in the face. They're not there, guys. And as these Jews were saying, whoa, Jesus is just ripping these guys to shreds, because he does in this lesson, rips to shreds. He repudiates so many aspects of the scribes and Pharisees' religion in this chapter. It's a revolution. A revolution not against Rome. A revolution against external religion. A revolution against ceremonial and ritualistic religion. The religion of the heart. A religion of the heart was what Jesus was calling for. A religion that followed him. Not a religion of self. It's a religion of God. So they are not worthy. And the idea of exceeding the status quo, and we think we have that today. I'm going to make a point of this as well. What we see, sometimes we see as a standard. This is the level of righteousness that we expect because it's what we see in those around us. Jesus calls us to disciple him, not mankind. So we may have someone in our life that we think is doing well in godliness, and they may be, like a Paul. He says, follow me as I imitate Christ, though. And so the idea of exceeding the status quo that his disciples, these men and women, were being called to exceed the religion that they were participating in that day, to exceed the righteousness of those who claim to be righteous, who claim to be elite. And so we see a spiritual revolution, or negatively, a repudiation of the scribes and Pharisees. His mission was to fulfill the law and prophets, not to destroy them, not to unravel them. It was still God's law. It was from the mouth of God. Jesus fulfilled the timing until all be fulfilled, right? There was going to come a time. There was a change coming. And they surely didn't understand that, right? They didn't. But Jesus gives a hint, until all is fulfilled. There are lesser and greater commands. They thought, they perceived. The Pharisees and scribes were worried about the lesser, or the greater commands. They wanted to make sure that they'd done the ones who made them look righteous. And then fulfilling righteousness, they must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, a repudiation of the religion that they participated in of that day, a repudiation of the religious elite of that day. So let's take a moment to think about lessons. First of all, drawing from this, Jesus fulfills all righteousness. In every aspect, Jesus fulfilled righteousness. He was going to be charged against that, and maybe some today will even say Jesus did not, but he did. He kept the old law perfectly. He did. And then he also, to fulfill all righteousness, he obeyed John's baptism. Why? Did he need to? Only to fulfill righteousness. He did not lack something. There was not anything about that baptism that helped him. I believe he did that baptism, and he says, to fulfill all righteousness. And you remember, because he is a mediator in Hebrews 2:16 through 18 and Hebrews 4:14 through 16. Speak of his nature as a mediator, his job as a mediator. One thing that qualifies him as our mediator, a sympathetic mediator, is that he lived as a human being, he endured as a human being, he obeyed as a human being, he performed righteousness as a human being, including being baptized as a human being. You know, who would he be if he didn't obey the John the Baptist baptizer? He lived under his era. It was the baptism John taught. It was not just John's baptism. It was from God. Who was Jesus to go and do something different than what God said do? He fulfilled all righteousness. And so a very important lesson. Jesus fulfilled all righteousness. And he is a sympathetic mediator. He is sympathetic to us, our needs, our trials, our difficulties. And he himself obeyed the law. He did not hold himself above the law to obey the law, right? He enjoined in us with us in obeying the laws. Greater commands. We want to be concerned about the mindset of greater and lesser commands. The mindset that the idea of hypocritical law keeping. You know, I keep the important ones, and that makes me better than you. Because you're failing at the ones I'm good at, and all that's saying is that I'm better than you, right? That's what the Pharisees did. I've decided this law is important right here. This law is important, especially important because I'm good at keeping it. Y'all got this one handled, so that's an important one. If you can't keep this one, then you're lesser than me, obviously, right? That's that Pharisaical, hypocritical attitude. Because I keep one law better than you doesn't make me better than you, but in the world where people are competing, have that competitive mindset, that superior mindset, preeminent mindset, we can fall into this. That's what happened to the Jewish hierarchy. All the ones I keep are the important ones. The ones I'm not good at, those are not as important. So we can have that mindset. We can elevate some laws over the other. We do realize as we study that love is a very important one. But it doesn't minimize the other ones, right? It doesn't minimize. It doesn't exclude, well, I don't have to keep the other ones. So a great warning for us against hypocritical law-keeping, and that we place ourselves above others because we're good at one thing, and the things we're not good at are obviously not as important, right? So in my mind, I was like, make this simple. Make it, you know, condense this down for me. Make Christianity easy. Just tell me one or two things to do. Give me a couple of things. I can handle a couple of things. No. That's the difficult part of following Jesus. They're all important. It's not that simple. If it was as simple as something man would come up with, God could only come up with the system. God came up with how we can live our lives, and it's not simple. I did not remember to put this in my notes, but C.S. Lewis had a quote, something effect of mankind has not tried religion and found that it wasn't good for them. They tried it and found it difficult. I butchered it, but the idea is it is hard, but it is best for us. It is what God has designed for us. And to simplify beyond what God has done is to take away from it. So there are no true greater commands. We have to be careful of that. And I have been a victim of this myself. I have fallen into this myself. Where we have certain hobby horses and pet peeves. And I have tried to migrate away from this concept because everything's important. Now, and it may be true, it certainly is true, that today there are certain things that affect us maybe more than other generations. Every generation may have unique problems, unique difficulties. It just shows that Satan's never ending his temptation and testing us. To get us to go down the wrong path. But I am much very very much more so conscientious of hobby horses and pet peeves, though I do have some, that all doctrines and all teachings are important. We need to discuss all of them and deal with all of them. And so some sort of very, very important thing to me here as we talk about, as we worship God, as we study, and as we live our lives, that we very much adhere to this warning, or take heed against the hypocritical law-keeping, that we elevate ourselves a superior position over others because we're good at one, and that makes us better than others. That attitude is very much what the scribes and Pharisees had, and it was very much condemned, and it very much put them in a place where they were not saved. They were not in line with God, and that's a place we must turn from in our lives. None can be dismissed. And finally, we disciple Jesus. We disciple Jesus. The Jews' ideology was nationalistic. I am a Jew. I was born a Jew. I can trace my lineage. For the most part, all of them could. Some couldn't, but basically they knew they were children of Abraham. Therefore, I am in the kingdom. Well, that was not the correct view. They weren't in the kingdom. They had to change. They had to follow Jesus. Their thought was, Jesus will join us, and we will conquer the world for God. That nationalistic view, that was not right. They had to disciple Jesus. Jesus did not join the Jews. Jesus set his kingdom up and said, come to me. Which again, that got crossways with the scribes and Pharisees. The scribes and Pharisees wanted Jesus to come in their kingdom. And they've been happy for Jesus to come in their kingdom and help their kingdom grow and conquer their enemies, but it was flipped. Jesus says, you come to me, Jesus says, right? But so that Jesus, the Jews' ideology was nationalistic, and physical kingdom-wise, that the nation itself would be restored, but they needed to disciple Jesus. We too can have a similar view. We can just call it a denominational view. We can just have this view that we're following a church doctrine. That is no better than the Jewish ideology, their nationalistic view of the kingdom, right? We are judged by our actions. We are not saved by our church. We're not saved by our family. Our family will not get us into heaven. Someone has told me this in my life. I believe it was an uncle. God has no grandchildren. God has no grandchildren. Everybody is a child to God directly. God does not choose our children because I am faithful. My children will not get in heaven because of me, therefore be God's grandchildren. My children will make it to heaven because they have a relationship with God and they do what God says. God has no grandchildren. Our family will not save us. Our church will not save us. Now, I don't mean, that's not discounting that the church is there to help. We're to be a part of that. It's an important part of that. I'm not discounting that at all. But just because I'm sitting in a pew in front of a church building that has a sign outside that says, Church of Christ, not getting me into heaven. That don't get you there. What have I done? I answer to God, directly to God. And again, our family, they can help us. It's an important part of our life. But I'm not getting to heaven because my dad was faithful. I'm going to get to heaven because I was faithful. So God does not have grandchildren. It's not the church that saves us. It's not our family that saves us. We are judged by our action. So this denominational view that just because a sign out front says Church of Christ or whatever we want it to say, that doesn't get us into heaven. You always heard that joke. I say a joke. It is unfortunate, I would say. But in religion and in other denominations, I've heard it said this. This is not just true Churches of Christ. I've heard it said by people from Baptist denominations, other churches. You're the only ones going to heaven, right? You've heard that. And the response, one of the responses that I've always had is, well, no, we're probably not all going either. Okay, we're not, because that sign's out front don't get us there. We have to be obedient to God. We disciple Jesus. That's who we follow. That's who we follow. And then finally, I want to throw this last point in here about the comparative religion. You know, the Jews would have sat there and looked at the scribes and Pharisees, and they did. They said, well, if this rich man can't be saved, how can I be saved? If that rich man can't be saved, how can I be saved? I can't compare to his righteousness. And we cannot in our lives get caught up in this comparative religion. I'm better than them, right? Or I'm as good as so-and-so. Or I'm not like so-and-so. I didn't do this and I didn't do that. I'm as good as so-and-so is and I'm better than so-and-so is. None of those get us in heaven. None of those do, right? Jesus is the standard. We are following Jesus. We are mimicking Jesus. And we get caught in this comparative game and looking at others and worried about others and how we compare to them and that we're better than them or we're not like them, then we've missed the point. Again, it's that hypocritical idea in that comparative religion doesn't work. We disciple Jesus, right? Remember the flood. You want to start comparing yourself to anybody, go live with the flood. There were 8 people saved. There was a lot of people sitting around, well, I'm not as bad as so-and-so. Yeah, but were you as righteous as Noah? Their standard was Noah at that time. Noah lived righteously. Now, certainly he was a man, so he had his failings too. But if you lived in the flood and said, well, I'm not as bad as so-and-so, well, you're out there floating in the water for a little while too, not very long. Comparative religion does not work. And we're going to talk about that again because it really comes up, I think, in Matthew 7, talking about judging and what in that situation there. There's a extreme danger in that this idea of comparative religion. If I'm going to compare myself to somebody else, I've got it all backwards. I've got it all wrong. It's not about how I compare. It's certainly not about me being better than someone else, placing myself above someone else. That's not what it's about. It's about me discipling Jesus, keeping a focus on Jesus and serving Him. And not the haughty, prideful attitude that I'm better or I'm not as bad. And I'm not like that publican praying. Remember the Jew? Look down. He prayed to God. I'm thankful I'm not like him. We don't, there's extreme danger in that. Extreme danger in that. Does not get us in the kingdom of heaven. So some lessons I wanted to draw here as we look at Matthew 5, 17 through 20. I hope those lessons were valuable to us. Are you discipling Jesus? That is who we disciple. That is who we follow after as best we can. As a church here, we work together to do that as well. And so if you want to disciple Jesus, Matthew recorded Jesus' instruction of discipling Jesus At the end of his gospel in Matthew 28, he told his apostles, go into all the world, discipling, making disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Would you want to disciple Jesus? We will baptize you this very day. If you have been and you stumbled along the way and we can help you, if there's anything that the church here can help you with, we would want to know about that as well. You're welcome to make that known as we sing the song selected number 606 as we stand and sing the song with Brian.